Good morning, counsel. This is the case of State versus Combs. And we will begin with introductions of the court. I am Mike Havikin, the Chief Justice, and now the other members of the court will introduce themselves by order of seniority as to service on the court.
Good morning. I'm Lindsay Miller Lerman.
William Castle.
Stephanie Stacy. Good morning.
Good morning, Jeff Funk.
And I should note that is the full contingent of the court this morning. Both Justice Papik and Frydenberg are recused on this matter. Ms. Wooster, are you with us this morning?
I am, Your Honor.
Good morning to you. And Mr. Ralph, are you with us this morning?
Yes, I am.
Good morning to you. Do either counsel have any questions before we begin?
No.
I do not.
No, I do not.
Very good. Ms. Wooster, you may proceed.
Thank you. It is a pleasure to be here this morning, even by video. And I want to thank you for taking the time to hear further argument on this case. A main issue for this case is whether appellant expressly requested trial counsel to file an appeal. The essential facts to that issue are the emails that occurred roughly right before and right after sentencing, the sentencing hearing on May 14th, a $5,000 check that was sent from appellant to trial counsel. There's also the phone call that occurred on June 8th, 5 days prior to the appeal deadline, and then the follow-up emails that occurred on June 14th between appellant and trial counsel, and that was a day after the appeal deadline. Prior to sentencing, conversations between appellant and trial counsel had already started regarding an appeal. At that point in time, the plan was if appellant received any time of incarceration, then it would be an automatic filing of an appeal by trial counsel. However, appellant received probation, and so then communication started between appellant and trial counsel to determine whether an appeal should be filed. Probably the main email regarding that issue occurred on May 15th, the day after the sentencing hearing. That's the email that the district court had noted was not a model of clarity. And in that email, it's from appellant to trial counsel. Appellant specifically said that there was an amount owed. $16,000 was still owed to trial counsel. But trial counsel would take a $5,000 discount if an appeal was filed. And in order to do that, $10,000 would be the flat fee for the appeal, but $5,000 would be due now, meaning immediately. And then on May 29th, just 14 days after that email correspondence, trial counsel had sent appellant an email saying that the $5,000 was coming. $5,000 would be in the mail. That also put trial counsel on notice that a $5,000 check would be coming. And that amount is important because it's not the $16,000 that appellant still owed to trial counsel. It's not a $1,000 check, you know, a showing of good faith that some money is going to be paid. It was a specific amount requested by trial counsel in order to have that filing of the appeal started now.
Counsel, did the district court judge ultimately make a factual determination that there was no express request to file an appeal?
The district court did decide that. The district court looked at the testimony of trial counsel who said that there was, during the phone call on June 8th, that there was no express statement made, and looked at the testimony of appellant who said on June 8th, that phone call, that appellant said, let's do it, meaning let's file. The district court found that appellant's statement was not credible.
Counsel, when we review this, we review the factual findings under a clearly erroneous standard, don't we?
Yes, Your Honor.
And when we do that, don't we view the evidence in the light most favorable to the prevailing party, in essence, in this instance, to the state?
Yes, Your Honor.
So are you arguing that the $5,000 check was in and of itself a direction to take an appeal?
I think looking at the totality of the circumstances, the $5,000 check was more evidence that appellant was planning to appeal. Because in the deposition that's in the Bill of Exceptions, the May 29th email where appellant informs trial counsel that the $5,000 check is coming, appellant does say he's still trying to determine whether to appeal or not.
So you concede the $5,000 check in and of itself is not dispositive?
Yes.
All right, thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Is your argument then that the $5,000 check was in service to the May 15th communication? If you want an appeal, send $5,000.
I do believe, yes, that the $5,000 was sent in response to the May 15th email correspondence, that if an appeal was going to be done, the $5,000 needed to be sent now. It later determined that if an appeal was not taken, that money could have been used for something else. But at that point, the intention of sending the $5,000 check was for the appeal. And further, I think there's multiple circumstances that support that appellant was planning to appeal. The phone conversation on June 8th, appellant had testified that he told trial counsel, let's do it. There's the email correspondence on June 14th from appellant to trial counsel, where appellant requests or inquires as to whether the appeal had been filed. And then there's also the correspondence back and forth prior to June 14th regarding the questions on appeal, how much would it cost, could his sentence be increased, the typical questions that a client is going to ask of an attorney when trying to determine whether to appeal a case or not. And for any ambiguity that was present between the conversations of appellant and trial counsel, I think that falls on the attorney to fix that. Trial counsel in his own deposition stated that what could have fixed it is after the phone call on June 8th, an email could have been sent to appellant, rehashing what had occurred during that June 8th phone call and pointing out, which it's according to trial counsel, that he had still wanted confirmation from appellant that following Monday. Had an email been sent rehashing that phone conversation on June 8th, there wouldn't be any miscommunication about what had occurred. It's the attorney who has the knowledge, has the experience, who understands the appeal deadlines. When there's a 30-day appeal deadline, the attorney is tasked with knowing when that 30 days is to run out, which is why appellant sent the email on June 14th, unaware that the 30 days had already run out. Trial counsel knew that. Trial counsel should have followed up with the bookkeeper on Monday. Trial counsel had actual notice that the check was coming. And I think it falls on trial counsel to check with the bookkeeper, check with the firm to see if that check had come, and to even follow up with appellant when he received the email on May 29th stating from appellant where the $5,000 check was in the mail. A simple way to fix that miscommunication would have been for trial counsel to follow up with appellant, confirming what that $5,000 check was for. you know, appellant.
Do we have any case law to support your last assertion there that there should have been a follow-up call?
I do not. The case law regarding ineffective assistance at counsel tends to point out that as long as trial counsel informs the client of the right to appeal, that that's sufficient. But the facts in this case are a little bit unique. Most of the case law that was supported by the state or found from previous cases involves a single communication between appellant and trial counsel, or in one case, there was even email correspondence between the client's mom and trial counsel. So what we have here are a series of communications and miscommunication between appellant and trial counsel. And
in response to my question earlier, you said that the $5,000 check was not dispositive, but as I listened to your argument, it seems to me that that is essentially what you're arguing. Do you want to reevaluate your previous answer?
That's a good question. I think the holdup with the check is when the email was sent regarding the $5,000 is appellant does state that he is still debating the appeal. And so when the check was sent, it is sent with the intention of filing the appeal, but I also understand that he was still debating that decision. And so that's where it ends.
Apropos my previous question to clarify whether or not May 29th, $5,000 was in effect acceptance of the offer of May 15th to engage the lawyer for an appeal.
I think that would be an acceptance of the offer.
And in the area where it is alleged that a client asked, in the criminal area where the client asks for an appeal, prejudice is presumed if there was a factual finding that an appeal was requested. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Thank you.
Ms. Wooster, what do we actually have in the record about the $5,000?
There is not a copy of the $5,000 check. There's the email correspondence from May 15th and May 29th regarding the $5,000 check. And then in trial counsel's deposition, he does confirm that his office did receive the check. On that Monday, June 11th, his office did receive that $5,000 check.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Ralph, good morning to you. You may proceed.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Austin Ralph. I represent the state of Nebraska. Combs argues that the district court erred in denying his motion for post-conviction relief following an evidentiary hearing. We disagree. Basically, in his motion, Combs claims that his counsel is ineffective for failing to file a direct appeal, but the district court found that Combs had not expressly instructed his counsel to appeal. That finding of fact was not clearly wrong. And additionally, based on the record, Combs' counsel did consult with Combs about an appeal, and so it was not ineffective under the relevant legal framework. That being the case, we ask this court to affirm the judgment below because the district court correctly denied Combs' motion for post-conviction relief. I think the district court's fact-finding, as a number of your honors have pointed out, is key. The district court specifically found no express instruction by the defendant to file a direct appeal. That included the let's do it comment. The district court specifically found that the appellant was not credible on that. And the $5,000 check, the district court determined also was not sufficient. The evidence was not sufficient to find that to be an express instruction for a number of reasons. One being that the May 29th email, the defendant specifically said, I'm sending you the $5,000 check, but I'm also not sure about whether to file an appeal. Also, it was sent to the firm not necessarily directly to the counsel. So the district court on those facts, I think, determined no express instruction. I think that was correct and not clearly wrong. In the absence of an express instruction, the law is clear that the defendant has a the law is clear that if the trial counsel consults with the defendant and then follows his lead, I guess, that he is not ineffective. And effectively, that's what the counsel in this case did under the U.S. Supreme Court's case defining what consulting means. I think if you read the depositions of both trial counsel and the defendant, that he met that standard. And of course, there was no express instruction, as the district court found, and so counsel was not ineffective. Unless this court has questions, I would submit it on that. I would also point out this court's case in State v. Dalton, I think, while not directly on point, had some good language in there about the duty to follow up. And this court specifically said, we are unwilling to place an increased burden on trial counsel to go beyond informing a defendant of the right to appeal and how counsel may be contacted to request that an appeal be filed. The responsibility for requesting an appeal remains with the defendant. And I think that applies here. Unless this court has any questions, I would submit it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have any time for rebuttal? There is no time for rebuttal. Counsel, thank you both for participating by WebEx today. You are now excused, and in fact, this is the last case of the day, so that the court is adjourned.